Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Motivational Intelligence Podcast. I'm Sean Johnson. It's our job on this podcast to deconstruct for you what makes people and organizations successful. Today's episode is another deep dive conversation with John Casey. Last time John and I talked, we took a deep dive on how to build a culture of innovation. And there's a topic that came up during that conversation, which we thought was worth another episode. That is, what is the difference between human nature and human conditioning? So that's what this episode is about. John talks about what most people get wrong about this. What are the major forces that condition us, whether that be parenting, friends, the media we consume, and how should we be thinking about those things? So I think you'll really enjoy this episode. Throughout, John mentions a few different things that you'll be able to find in the show notes. One is a poem that he reads called Friends that I absolutely love. I think you will too. Another, he talks about above the line, below the line, and also mentions five different studies on positive psychology. All of those will have handy-dandy downloads for you on twological.com/podcast. Just click on this episode, and you'll be able to download those things. They'll be great little cheat sheets for you as you try to remember some of the lessons and takeaways from this episode. So until next time, please enjoy. Feel free to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening to this. We would love to hear what you think and what you want to hear more of, what you want to hear less of, and how we can make this more valuable for you. Until next time, enjoy this episode.
The Motivational Intelligence Podcast is produced by the team at Two Logical. Two Logical is an international corporate training firm and the world's leading expert in motivational intelligence, which is the ability to understand, manage, and change the motives people have. Two Logical offers over 30 different keynotes, workshops, and full training courses to small, medium, and large Fortune 500 companies in 53 countries, a lot of which you're probably familiar with: Pfizer, Bank of America, GE, Constellation Brands, P&G, and more. All solutions are completely customized, and the feedback from these sessions will blow your mind. If you have any training or speaking needs or just want to say hey, head over to twological.com.
Good. You good?
Yep.
Okay. Right, cool. Let's see. All right. We're back with John Casey. John, what's going on?
Oh, everything.
Everything?
And nothing.
All at the same time, huh? You had mentioned something last time we had talked that I wanted to kind of focus our conversation on today. It was in when we had the discussion about innovation. You kind of had mentioned, and we talked a little bit about the what is the difference between human nature and human conditioning. So I thought that'd be a good spot for us today.
Yeah, that's such an important concept, and frankly, Sean, most people have it backwards.
Hmm. All right.
So they've got actually the concepts or the definitions reversed.
Okay. All right. Well, that's a good place. I like the little cliffhanger there too. all right. Well, let's start there. How do they have it? What is the difference? And maybe that's the way to start. Is how do people think about it, and how should they be thinking about it?
Well, I think we've all heard people say, "Well, that's just human nature,"
mm-hmm.
and usually when they say it, it's not a compliment.
Right?
It
yeah, it rarely
somebody
is.
Where somebody's been let down, or it's and that's not it. That's what human conditioning is. It's,
yeah,
it's aiming for and accepting lower levels. So human nature is essentially the pure human spirit, and it's quite simple. It's how we're born, and frankly, it is ideal. The human nature that we're born with, and we'll get into that a little bit deeper, I'm sure, is all we need to build the life of our dreams. But then, as we get to some formative stages in our lives, we start to embrace lower level thinking. And instead of aiming high, we start aiming lower or accepting mediocrity or giving up quicker. And that's essentially what human conditioning is. You know, being more like the masses than the outliers or the ones that hold themselves to higher standards. So, you know, human nature is that baby that believes in themselves and will never give up. And human conditioning is, well, I tried it once and it didn't work, or that's not my style, or I'm just a blank, or I can only do blank. That's the conditioning that kind of takes over and lowers the bar.
Yeah, so, you know, maybe let's kind of separate those right now and dive a little bit deeper. So, you know, you'd mentioned the baby. You know, can you kind of paint a picture for us a little bit more of what really is human nature when we're talking about human nature? How are people born?
Right. Well. First of all, we are all born the same way: slimy, helpless, looking like an alien. Well, at least my kids. And you know, we are completely helpless. We have no skills. All we have is the most powerful supercomputer we'll ever use, which is the human mind. A completely blank slate, which makes it fair. Everybody kind of starts out at the same spot. And you know, we have unlimited potential. We can chart our lives in any direction we choose. And you know, those are the three gifts we get at birth, and we all start out at the same spot. So it is quite fair. But this human nature, I mean, if you think about a baby, and obviously another thing we're born with, part of human nature, is collaboration and caring and giving, selflessness, because otherwise, you know, babies would be left and they wouldn't be cared for. So long ago, we came together in communities and selflessness, and that's part of human nature as well. But when you think about, you know, a baby, you know, you could describe them the same way we describe motivational intelligence. They are accountable. They are highly adaptable, incredibly resilient. They are not afraid to take initiative. And heck, all they do is exhibit courage all day long as they try to make it through their day. And it's all fueled by curiosity and collaboration, you know, working with the family or the adults that are raising them and, you know, going with the flow. So, you know, if you look at a one-year-old that's you know, crawling around, and obviously the world is very new to them, and they bump into anything that they've never seen before, and they just stop, and they look at it carefully from multiple sides. They touch it, they feel it. They're smoothing or feeling the surface. They put it near their face so that they could maybe smell it, and then of course it's going to go in the mouth. And it's not that they want to eat it; they just want to understand it. So they want to get all their senses involved, and you know, they're just eminently curious about their world, and they strive to know more about it. And of course, you know, the 9-10 month old realizes, you know, that they're the only ones crawling. And it takes them 5 minutes to crawl into the kitchen where the food is. So they quickly get it in their mind that they need to get up on the two sticks like everybody else, and they want to walk. However, we're not genetically programmed to walk. As a matter of fact, genetically speaking, no skill is passed on through our genes. 85% of our genes go to the makeup of our central nervous system in our brain, and 15% of our genes go to our physical characteristics. So, you know, skill isn't carried through genes. It's got to be figured out. And it's amazing. Those qualities that we're born with, human nature, accountability, adaptability, resilience, initiative, courage, curiosity, collaboration, those are the fuel that allows us to learn how to walk. Because, by the way, it takes, I don't know, 14 to, you know, 20 months to master walking. And luckily, we do it when we're very young and we don't know that we can't. Because on the journey for a baby learning how to walk, they're going to fall down 240 to 280 times. And never once will they judge themselves. Never once will they beat themselves up. Never once will they think they can't do it. They just continue until it's mastered. And then they don't have to think about it the rest of their lives, unless they have a brain injury or a brain disease. They've got it mastered, you know, by 1.5 or 2 or 2.5, and then it's in their kit for the rest of their journey. And, you know, after that comes communication, and, you know, they have to make thousands of mistakes to learn how to speak. And heck, a 2 or 3 year old can learn 2 or 3 or 4 languages at the same time, and they don't think they can't, so thus they do. And there are no barriers, there are no limits. And, you know, we talk to a lot of adults in corporations around the world, and they ask us, you know, we need our salespeople trained. And, you know, it's funny, they don't realize that we come pre-trained as humans on how to sell, because if you've ever met a 2-year-old that wants an additional cookie, they're the best salesperson on the planet, because they're always closing, they're always asking, they ignore the no's that the parents are giving them. And then it's funny, when one of the parents, you know, shuts them down and says, hey, stop asking me, I've said no 5 times, and I'm going to put you in a timeout if you ask again, they just change decision makers and go find another adult and start asking them.
They go find mom.
Well, you know, and that's a best practice of sales, is finding another decision maker. And and so they don't need training. And we don't, because we're born with this wonderful concept called human nature that is the fuel that allows us to really chart our life in any direction we choose. And of course, and we'll get to that maybe with the next question, but, you know, something happens at a very powerful formative stage of life where that human nature gets to be diluted and conditioned, if you will. So that's when that pure human spirit that we're often born with gets some boundaries and limits placed upon it.
Yeah. Well, you know, it strikes me that, you know, thinking about a baby, there's kind of two things that strike me. One is it seems that we're born happy. You know, you don't really see any babies that are super depressed or anxious or stressed out. And so, you know, that's one. And the second is we're kind of born pre-built for achievement. And those kind of characteristics seem to be where everybody starts. And you know, they're curious. They're in the moment. They're present. They're looking at, you know, their surroundings, and there's no limits on their mind.
Yeah. And if you think about it, if anybody should have stress on this planet, it should be a baby.
Yeah.
Because heck, they can't clean themselves. They can't feed themselves, and they can't move themselves around. So they got nothing.
Yeah.
That should be freaking them out.
Totally.
But they don't seem to be freaked out at all. They seem to be mostly content and curious and happy and not afraid to make eye contact with anyone. And, you know, and, you know, heck, by the time they get to, you know, 2 and 3, they tell the truth. They have to be taught to lie. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, it's amazing all these wonderful qualities we have that almost unconsciously get conditioned out.
Yeah. So, all right. So we're, you know, everybody comes into this world all slimy looking like an alien, you know, born happy, born built for achievement, and then something happens.
Yeah.
What happens?
Well,
because we're not all like that now.
No. we'd be out of business.
Yeah, right.
If that was the case. You know, there's a very formative stage of life that we go through, and on average, it's, you know, 3 or 4 to 6 or 7. And arguably, the most important thing we figure out as individuals really gets set in stone then. And it's when we develop our self-image, who we think we are, what we think we're capable of, what is our actual potential. And, you know, at the age of 3 or 4, what a child is actually trying to figure out is how to interpret the world they live in, how to interpret the feedback that they are receiving. And mostly what all that is being used for is how will they communicate with themselves? What will they say to themselves throughout their journey? And a lot of this inner voice or self-talk is developed about 70-80% of it between the ages of, you know, 3 and 6 or 7. And, you know, you know, human nature would never, it doesn't come with limits. It's boundaryless. So when, you know, a 7 or 8 or 10-year-old or 20-year-old, for that matter, that says, I'm just a blank, I can only do blank. I'm good at that, but I'm not good at this. That's human conditioning. That is limits. That is boundaries. And that is factually wrong. It is not how we are built, born. It's how we get conditioned.
So if, you know, they're at that stage, they start to figure out, how am I going to talk to myself? That's kind of, you know, it's that self-talk, that inner voice. Why is that important?
Because that's the driver. That rolls up the white flag, or it encourages continuation. It gives an out, or it keeps us in our lane. It gives us the green light or the red light. It really does. And, you know, whatever we say to ourselves over and over again becomes kind of like our operating system. And, you know, by the time we become adults, most people don't even hear the voice anymore. They just follow it. It's programmed.
Yeah, they don't even realize it's there.
Yeah. And, you know, the best throughout all of human history have always been the creator of that voice. And they know what to say to themselves in the moment, in the heat of battle, when it gets tough. They know how to encourage themselves. They know what to do to keep them on course, just like the baby learning how to walk. You know, we don't have a baby talk translator, so we don't know what the heck's going on in their head when they fall down learning how to walk, but then they get right up again and try it again. And, you know, the untrained eye of the parent misses the slight adjustment that they make each time they fall down. And, you know, sadly, that's one of the things that babies are better at. They don't see falling down when they're learning how to walk as negative feedback. They just look at it as, well, I won't do that again.
Yep, that didn't work.
And I'll just make an adjustment and move forward instead of just, you know, rolling up the white flag. So, you know, most adults, they had a barrier. They say, well, I'm just not good at math, or no, I can't do that, or I can't sell, or whatever it is. They tell themselves that, and then they give themselves an out, and they give up.
Yeah. So that kind of self-talk is a lot of times conditioned into them.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of things now that condition kids as we grow, certainly more now than decades in the past. And, you know, where we live, we need a license to catch a fish, but not to have a kid. And, you know, I know most parents are woefully unprepared to be a great parent. And they don't realize when they might be passing on some flawed or limited beliefs that actually confine or limit potential and begin to take a child away from human nature and towards human conditioning.
Yeah. So you know, as we get conditioned over time, and this conditioning is what's programming that inner voice in our head and programming our operating system, where eventually we're just kind of running on autopilot with a lot of this. So what are, you know, if these things are kind of, if this programming is happening, we're being conditioned this way, what are the things that are doing it? What are the major forces that are conditioning us or programming our minds?
Right. Well, you know, obviously at the formative stage of our life when we're children, it is the adults that are raising us. And it's not just the parents, it's the older siblings, it's the grandparents, it's the early teachers, daycare providers, babysitters. They all have an influence, as do, you know, Dora and Barney and SpongeBob. Yeah. And, you know, the TV is often used as a babysitter and, you know, not necessarily screened what's going on. So there's a lot of things that are influencing the child's development and how they see themselves in their world. But in the end, Sean, it's us it's mostly ourselves that carry forward the good or bad conditioning that happens to us. And at some point, clearly, by the time we're 18 or 22, we have to accept responsibility. And if our if our thought process isn't optimal,
yeah,
that we must hold ourselves accountable to fixing that and adjusting that. Because, you know, how we think about ourselves is not set in stone. And returning back to that pure state of, yeah, I don't know anything about anything, but I do know that I'll never give up. I'll never make excuses and point fingers. I believe in myself that I can change. I can set goals. I can be good at anything I choose to be good at. And I have the courage to accept not only negative feedback, but make mistakes and put myself in situations that make me feel uncomfortable, but they're going to grow me. And to continually be curious about the world we live in and how to make it better and how to, you know, serve others and continue to hold ourselves to the highest standards because, you know, in the end, our example is probably the best way to teach others, those that we work with, those that we live with, our own example. So, you know, in the end, there's many, many forces that can condition us and lower the bar and move us away from pure human nature. However, we're all responsible for fixing and adjusting that and being aware that it's happening.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, so you mentioned a few of those things there, you know, one being our parents, two being, you know, just other people we interact with in general, whether it's the babysitter, our friends or anybody else, and eventually colleagues and things like that. You mentioned another, which was media, you know, what's the TV shows we watch, the podcasts we listen to, the music that we listen to. So maybe I think it might be helpful to kind of break those down. I'm sure there's probably a lot of parents listening to this, you know, with a little bit of a siren going off saying, I wasn't really aware of all this stuff and you know, maybe a little bit nervous about how they're, you know, quote unquote programming or conditioning their kids. So for those people, how should we be thinking about parenting?
Well, you know, first of all, understanding that, you know, the responsibility we have to, you know, not only study, but reflect on our own upbringing and making decisions on what legacies to pass on and which not to pass on. You know, I caught myself once saying something that my father said to me that I didn't appreciate, and I checked myself right then and there, and I really sat down. And when the kids were asleep that night, really thought about, really, what did I want to reinforce? And yeah, it was very easy for me to fall back into a pattern that had been reinforced with me frequently. You know, I think what we should think about parenting is less than even most do. You know, if we can remind ourselves that this newborn is just pure human spirit, and just a bundle of energy and light that has no really fears. There might be fear of being hungry, but, you know, a baby's, you know, I think we're only born with that one fear, the fear of being hungry. Other than that, I mean, the baby is fearless. We see it. They're risk takers. All those wonderful qualities. They're curious. They're not afraid to ask. You know, just maybe do less as a parent. you know, have some, you know, boundaries, of course, but, you know, don't tell them what they can or can't be. You know, don't tell them who they are or who they can never be. And, you know, there's limits that we put, just especially when we get frustrated as parents. But, you know, maybe, and this is maybe a little weird, but, you know, If I've met a lot of people that grew up on working family farms, and they often had, you know, a whole bunch of siblings, and but I've never met somebody that grew up on a working family farm that wasn't a great employee, that wasn't a great team member. And it's almost like, because, you know, a farming family, they don't have a lot of time to do the parenting stuff, but they quickly start using that human nature to get the kids to work the farm.
Yeah.
And, you know, by the time they're 10, you know, they're driving the tractor and they're fixing it when it breaks down, and they're okay with getting up early and doing chores before school. And you know, then they do chores after school. They're often a good athlete on a sports team. They're often in scouts. They're, you know, a member of their church group and class president. And they don't even realize how special they are juggling all these different balls and doing in the same 24 hours that every other teenager gets. And it's almost a pretty good model to, you know, give responsibility to your kids sooner.
Yeah.
About their chores and about cleaning up their room and about helping out in the kitchen. All those things are great, great ways, you know, and instead of what started back, I think, in the 80s about coddling and doing everything for your kids and, you know, giving them a trophy when they come in last place. That's not reality. That doesn't teach anything but, you know, the opposite of cause and effect. You know, and always continuing to tie their shoes and cut up their food.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And, you know, there's helicopter parents, there's snowplow parents, there's, you know, parents that are now going into job interviews with their kids. There's parents that are calling into their kids' workplaces to talk to HR.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's almost like it's a comedy sketch or something. But that's the opposite. None of that.
Yeah.
None of that will ever work.
Yeah.
And less is a whole lot better. Stay out of the way. They've got that pure human spirit, that fuel of human nature. Let them run with it. Just keep some boundaries and maybe a helmet every now and then.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's how should we think about parenting? We should think about it, but think about how little we can do and how much we can allow them to explore and do and learn and experience and really leverage those wonderful gifts of human nature that they were born with.
Yeah. And it, you know, I love the, I think that's so true. The, you know, with, you know, people who grew up working on a family farm, it strikes me that probably, you know, what a lot of those people just, you know, it was less what their parents said and more what their parents did. You know, they were probably because they were too busy. You know, they were so busy, you know, working the farm and stuff, but that was just an example, I would think, for them to look at and aspire to.
Well, you know, hey, Junior, go out and plow the back 40. And, you know, that's dad talking to his, you know, 12-year-old son or daughter for that matter. And then he walks away to go do something else. So what is the kid picking up? Wow. Dad believes I can do it.
Yeah.
I better do it.
Yeah.
You know, that's a great tip for any bosses out there, too.
Yeah.
Let them do it. Stay out of their way. And then you have a you know, a conversation afterwards about how it went and what you learned. And, you know, then you can talk about best practices and other things. But, you know, I think it is a whole lot less than what people are doing out there.
Yeah. Well, it reminds me of there's a famous venture capitalist, Chris Sacca. He ran Lowercase Capital, which turned out to be one of the I think it was the most successful venture fund of all time. And he invested in Twitter and Uber and Facebook and a bunch of those. He did pretty well.
You can live on that.
Yeah, you can live on that. And I remember there was this one interview I listened to of him where he talked about who the founders are that he invested in. And one was, he said, a sense of inevitability in the way that they talked about it, which I thought was really interesting. And the other was that he talked about how he didn't really trust people that had never had a crappy job. And if they had worked a crappy job, then they kind of got, you know, you got to roll up your sleeves and get your hands dirty. If they had never had a crappy job, he was always very skeptical of that. That seemed like a pretty good lens to look at things.
Well, and heck, when we were kids, we loved the crappy jobs, the ones that got our hands dirty.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe that's a little part of human nature, too.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's building things or creating something, you know, you do got to get your hands dirty. So that's not a bad theme.
Yeah. All right. So, All right, so that's parenting. The other kind of thing that we talked about in terms of what shapes the way that we're conditioned, that kind of our operating system, if you will, is who we surround ourselves with, who are our friends, who are our colleagues, who are the people that we spend the time with. So how should we be thinking about that?
Yeah, that's, you know, that's a great question. You know, we can't pick our family, but we can pick our friends. And, you know, whether it's conscious or not, we are drawn to people a lot like ourselves. There is something in psychology called the chameleon complex, which means we do kind of, you know, move and speak and act like the people we spend a lot of time with. You know, as a matter of fact, I was given a really nice poem, and the author's unknown, about friends, and it really does a great job of explaining who and why we should pick the friends, the right friends. So I'll just real quick read it. It's a shorter poem. Tell me who your best friends are, and I'll tell you who you are. If you run with wolves, you'll learn how to howl. But if you associate with eagles, you will learn how to soar to great heights. You cannot pick your family, but you can pick your friends. A mirror reflects a person's face, but what they are really like is shown by the kinds of friends they choose. The simple but true fact of life is that you become a lot like those with whom you closely associate, for the good and the bad. The less you associate with some people, the more your life will improve. Anytime you tolerate mediocrity in others, it increases your mediocrity. An important attribute in successful people is their impatience with negative thinking and negative acting people. As you grow, your acquaintances will change. Some of your friends will not want you to go on. They will want you to stay where they are. Friends that don't help you climb will want you to crawl. Your friends will stretch your vision or choke your dream. Those who don't increase you will eventually decrease you. Consider this. Never receive counsel from unproductive people. Never discuss your problems with someone incapable of contributing to the solution, because those who never succeed themselves are usually the first to tell you how. Not everyone has a right to speak into your life. You are certain to get the worst of the bargain when you exchange ideas with the wrong person. Don't follow anyone who's not going anywhere. With some people, you spend a day and are exhausted and down. With others, you invest a day and are excited and hopeful. Be careful where you stop to inquire for directions along the road of life. Wise is the person who fortifies their life with the right friendships. So,
I love that.
I love that.
That's a good one.
And I read that frequently, and I love sharing that with folks. So, you know, here's some guidelines for the friends I have chosen and will continue to choose moving forward. And we'll let some relationships, you know, kind of wind down if they are not like this. And first and foremost is positive.
Yeah.
You know, frankly, it is easier to be negative than positive. You know, as we say, staying above the line requires a lot more energy and effort and conscious awareness rather than living below the line. We know that, you know, being positive, as a matter of fact, I have right here an article called 5 Scientific Studies That Prove the Power of Positive Thinking. And it goes in depth. There's hundreds and hundreds of studies that have confirmed how better it is to live a positive life. And that may be another topic we delve into. But, you know, being positive, supportive, encouraging. But one of the most important things that I think we should look for in our friends is that they're goal-directed, that they actually, you know, are hopefully looking forward to the future and building the life they want to live.
They want to go somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, we talk about the power of motivational intelligence, which is, of course, accountability, adaptability, resiliency, and initiative and courage. And, you know, those are great qualities to look for in the friends you choose. And, you know, one of the concepts that we talk about a lot is staying above the line and living above the line. And those are what that means, of course, is exhibiting the higher levels of human emotion. You know, the higher levels like positivity, like persistence, genuineness, selflessness, open-mindedness, forgiveness, confidence, responsibility, trust, integrity, passion, patience, faith, sincerity, focus, curiosity, honesty, humility, hopefulness. These are the higher levels of human emotion. And boy, those go a long way to describe, you know, a one-year-old or a two-year-old.
Yeah, I know.
So those are the qualities that take effort. They don't, you know, we're kind of born that way, but we get conditioned to below the line, which frankly is easier mentally. It takes less mental effort to have insecurity or fear or hate or doubt or resignation or greed, revenge, laziness, negativity, selfishness, anger, frustration, jealousy, envy, apathy, blame, spitefulness. These are lower level human emotions. They're negative human emotions. And, you know, frankly, there's a lot more people living below the line than above the line. And the answer as to why is because it's easier.
Yeah,
to live below the line.
It's everywhere. I mean, I would think a big part of why it's easier to live below the line versus above the line is all the stuff that you see out there, all the conversations you have or the stuff you read or the stuff you watch, most of it could be described below the line. It's the stuff you're getting hit with all day.
Well, yeah, and, you know, a lot of people that haven't necessarily studied the media know that a long, long time ago there was a saying about the media that was coined, and you know, the motto of the media is, you know, if it bleeds, it leads. you know, there's not a lot of selling of newspapers with good news.
Yeah.
I mean, bad news sells, bad news gets the headlines, and that's what's often led with. And when you're overwhelmed with that negative approach to the news, it is overwhelming. It mentally fatigues us, and it kind of teaches us the behavior that's lower level, that's more conditioned,
right,
to look negative first, to put down first, and so they haven't helped.
Yeah, no, not so much. So that, I mean, that's actually a good segue into you know, for how should we be thinking about that? You know, the things that we consume, it's, you know, we have screens and headphones, and, you know, it's everywhere we look, there's, you know, something to read or something to watch or something to listen to. And, you know, we do it a lot of times without really thinking about it. It's just whatever comes across or whatever pops up. But how should we be thinking about that? Should we be thinking about that?
We should. We should consider our news sources very carefully and know what their agenda is. You know, obviously, we are naturally drawn to media or stories that support what we believe. So that just confirms a lot of our existing headset stuff. But understanding those outlets, what their objectives are, what their real agenda is really, really important. And trusting, you know, is it objective? Is it peer reviewed? Does it hold itself to you know, reporting standards for truth and verifying sources and all that other stuff? And frankly, most of the media that is being consumed today does not really.
It can't live up to
stuff that's published and whatnot. So consider your news sources very carefully. And I think, as I do, I look for sources also that disagree with my beliefs intentionally. I want to know what the other side is saying.
Yeah,
I want to know, because they have, you know, they're just as smart over there. They're just as educated over there. They've got to have reasons for why they believe what they believe. I'm curious. I want to know what they are.
Yeah.
And and on some, it's mostly with my friends and my family, I will readily be a contrarian as well. And, you know, if somebody's a right winger, hey, I can give you a left wing argument too, and it's cogent, and it's got facts, and it's got stuff. And by the way, if you're a left winger, I'm going to give you a right wing argument because I got the stuff over there too. And, you know, there was something that I took in college to get out of taking some math classes. Debate was actually in the analytical thought department where I went to university. And instead of taking calculus, I took that. And little did I know how impactful it would have been that it was in my life. Because I thought, well, I'm a athlete and we're going to have a competition and I want to win a debate. And, you know, I can yell and I can be loud. So I thought I'd be good for the debate team. And but what I really learned is that when you go into a debate, you don't get to pick what you support or defend. And it may not even be your angle that you want to go at the topic with. So as you lead up to a debate, you and your team have to prepare two arguments, one for and one against.
And you find out that day, like the day of the...
Yeah, like 30 minutes before.
Okay, so you're on this side or you're on that side.
Yeah.
Wow.
So get your stuff ready. So you got to prepare both sides.
Yeah, right.
And then you got to go. And it really gave me a whole lot of empathy and understanding that there is just as a cogent and organized argument on the other side. And you must respect that. You must know it.
Yeah.
And respect it. And it's okay to agree to disagree.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's an old saying, and I think it's actually a Native American proverb, and I'll probably butcher it a little bit, but, you know, walk a mile in someone else's shoes before you criticize them.
Yeah.
You know, put yourself in their shoes and try to understand their position before you attack. So I think that's really, really good advice because then, you know, after you've heard and understood their position, you can criticize them because you're a mile away and you have their shoes.
There you go. It's a perfect strategy.
So actually, there's some seriousness at the beginning there. I was stretching for a joke at the end. But, you know, in the end, the sources where you consume your news from are really, really important, and it's got to be accurate, and it's got to be the whole spectrum, not just the narrow focus of what you believe in.
Yeah, yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's probably more important now than maybe ever. All right, so that kind of covers where the topic. Is there any kind of closing thoughts or anything like that you want to leave people with?
Thanks. You know, okay, so human nature. It's that pure human spirit we're born with, and as since, you know, we're adults or we're mostly adults now, it's not easy. It's not easy. It was easier when we didn't know any different, and we thought that's all there was. So it's not easy, but it's worth it. And, you know, we were born with it, so it's not necessarily foreign to us. And we should continue to strive to maximize it and hold ourselves accountable to it. And, of course, human conditioning is just lowering the bar on all that good stuff. And it's an easier path to take. But in the end, it'll probably leave us with regrets and a lot of questions towards the end of the journey, you know, coulda, woulda, shoulda. And no, that's not how we come into the world, and that's not how we should leave. So, you know, keep in mind the mindset of a 1-year-old or a 2-year-old that wants something, and that'll maybe spark you a little bit. But you know, human nature is the good stuff, and it's what we should remind ourselves and strive for. And human conditioning is the bad stuff. It's the lower level stuff, and it's what we should try to avoid.
Yeah. All right. Well, John, thanks for taking the time. For everybody listening, we're gonna I'll grab from you the that poem.
Yes.
And those studies. And maybe I know you had a graphic of that above the line, below the line. That maybe we'll toss all that in the show notes for people. So if you're listening and want any of that stuff, We'll have that there for you. Go to twological.com/podcast, and it'll be right there for you. So until next time, John, thanks for taking the time, man.
You're welcome, Sean.
All right. Hey guys, one more thing before you take off. This is Motivational Intelligence Insider. It's just a very short, exclusive email every Monday that comes from Dave, John, and the guests on this show. This is the only place they share their very, very best stuff, and it's delivered right to your inbox every single Monday. This could include exclusive tips for upping your game, articles they're reading, videos they're watching, stories from the road, and on and on. It's the best way to kick off your week, and this content is comes directly from Dave, John, and the guests, and is only available to subscribers of Motivational Intelligence Insider. So if you want these guys and gals to email you their best stuff, go to twological.com/insider. That's the number 2logical.com/insider, and drop in your email. And if you do, I hope you enjoy.
The Motivational Intelligence Podcast is produced by the team at Two Logical. Two Logical is an international corporate training firm and the world's leading expert in motivational intelligence, which is the ability to understand, manage, and change the motives people have. Two Logical offers over 30 different keynotes, workshops, and full training courses to small, medium, and large Fortune 500 companies in 53 countries, a lot of which you're probably familiar with. Pfizer, Bank of America, GE, Constellation Brands, P&G, and more. All solutions are completely customized, and the feedback from these sessions will blow your mind. If you have any training or speaking needs or just want to say hey, head over to twological.com.